Our first reading this morning is from Jeff Updike's book, Love and Money. Here, the Wall Street Journal columnist relates a story from his own experience that being a long overdue conversation he needed to have with his wife, Amy, about their personal finances. In it, he names the amount of money they had in their savings account. If you have a savings account, your balance may be higher or lower than theirs. Hear, though, that what matters most is not the amount. It's that this sort of conversation take place at all.
Talk is cheap. It's the silence that's expensive. Each of us has our own definition of what constitutes a feeling of financial security. And the goal is to find ways to compromise so that both partners agree a fair balance has been struck between safety, covering a possible financial emergency, and investing for a secure future. Communicating about your money will better your financial life and help you and your partner build not just a stronger bank balance, but a more robust relationship. The story starts right after I announce to Amy our savings account balance. Pleased that my math matched the bank's, I wrapped up the exercise by telling her it was $15,401.99. We're good to go. "Humph," she grunted. Amy wanted our account to hold at least 6 months' worth of expenses. I reasoned that 3 months would be fine. It would have been convenient to let the discussion drop at that point and just stick to the status quo or argue with one another about why my position makes more sense than your position. Instead, I asked her why she was so unhappy with our savings account balance. So we talked. I asked her, what is it about the number $15,401.99 that makes it so bad for you to go, "Humph"? She blurted out, "Because our account is always around $15,000. I don't feel like we're going anywhere. We should have more money." There it was, the emotional root of this entire argument. Amy wasn't mad about the money. Money was just the outward expression of a much more deep-seated relationship concern she silently harbored all these years. She was mad because more than a decade into this marriage, she didn't see our life progressing. She just never knew how to communicate what she was feeling, and I'd never asked. Amy's comment made me realize how ill-prepared she felt financially and how clueless she was about our financial life. I'm not saying that condescendingly. Indeed, part of it was my fault. Our nest egg grows bigger with every paycheck, as bits and pieces of money flow into retirement accounts and savings accounts and occasionally investment accounts. We have plenty of money to meet an emergency. I've just never communicated that to Amy very well, just assuming she knew that we were okay.
Thank you, Ruby. Our second reading this morning is Mary Oliver's poem, Percy Speaks While I Am Doing Taxes. Percy is her pet dog. The rest is self-explanatory.
First of all, I don't want to be doing this. Second of all, Percy does not want me to be doing this. hanging over my desk like a besieged person with a dull pencil and innumerable lists of numbers. Outside, the water is blue. The sky is clear. The tide is rising. Percy, I say, this has to be done. This is essential. I'll be finished eventually. Keep me in your thoughts, he replies. Just because I can't count to 10 doesn't mean I don't remember yesterday or anticipate today. I give you one more hour. Then we step out into the beautiful, money-deaf gift of the world and run.
Thank you, Nathan. Money, death, gift of the world. Don't look out the windows, my friends. Wait. Don't look out the windows. Given that today, April 15th, is the traditional day our taxes are due, and that this congregation's annual pledge drive will soon be entering a new phase, I've been looking forward to talking about money with you today. Yes, actually looking forward to talking with you about money. Because a little more than 2 years ago, I stood before you here in this very room and mentioned an experiment involving money that I was about to embark upon. And I told everyone there that I'd get back to you, which is something I haven't had the opportunity to do, haven't taken the opportunity to do until now. The experiment was one of trying on a new level of pledge giving, of giving back to this congregation. And this is what I said then, and I'm quoting. I also want you to know that yesterday I upped my financial pledge for next year. Earlier this month, I submitted a pledge of 5% of my current salary. Yesterday, I increased that pledge to 7%. I will notice that change. While I have some good friends and colleagues who tithe to their congregations, give 10%, I'm not quite ready to make that leap, but I leave in the work of this religious community. When I wanted other congregations I've served to do something I knew they could if they stretched, I said, let's call this an experiment. Most of the time, though not always, those experiments paid off. I'm considering 7% a personal experiment. I never pledged that much to anything before. And because Joe takes it straight from my paycheck, you'll get it. I'll let you know how the experiment turns out. And I concluded, but what is important is not my relationship to this congregation. What's important is your relationship with each other, relationships with each other and to the wider community. For several years, this congregation stewardship team has been inviting our members and friends to consider a pledge of 5%, as Steve Abbott mentioned earlier. When I was in seminary, I learned that the average pledge made to one of our congregations was about 1.25%. And being born in this faith, I was shocked when fellow students who had grown up in other faith traditions talked about their family's tithing, giving 10% to their church. I had never heard of such a thing. After I began serving my first congregation professionally, the rabbi in town and I became fast friends. But I was astounded when he talked of the dues his synagogue set out for its members. We talked about how demographically his people and my people were nearly identical with that main difference, the difference in level of average giving. My own giving, based on the salary of a small church minister in a California economy, may have been a little more than 1.25%, but it wasn't much bigger at the time. I have no idea what my parents contributed to the congregations we were part of when I was growing up. We didn't talk about money much in my family. We seemed to be doing okay, but I had the sense that my father was always worried whether he was providing sufficiently for all of us. He would bring home from work at the pharmaceutical plant 2 to 3 hours of work every night, double that on the weekends. He took his role as provider for us very seriously, and though my mother wanted to work, I don't know how happy he was ever about it. When I was maybe 7, Dad brought home a ledger for me to keep track of my spending and my savings. At the time, my allowance couldn't have been more than 25 cents a week, and maybe I got that every other week. I just don't remember. I'd buy comic books and candy. Apparently, that was enough for me back then because saving was something that made no sense to me whatsoever. Probably it meant that I could whine or weasel my way into getting my folks getting bigger toys for me, I'm ashamed to say. And so my father's intended lesson, that ledger, may have been used once or twice, but I'm sure I never opened it after the 4th day. The only other lesson about money I remember from my childhood occurred during a trip with my family and a few of my friends to Chicago's Museum of Science and Industry. Perhaps it was a birthday party excursion. What I remember was wanting some book in the museum bookstore and asking the friend who was closest by me in the store to loan me a buck so I could afford it. When my mother found out, she turned chalk white. Never ask for money outside the family ever again. That lesson got through. I know we gave what we could to the church, and not only in time. My parents were both active lay leaders, and I know my mother chaired at least one pledge campaign. My father was on the search committee for minister and president for 2 terms. But even when I was coming into my own, my family never talked about money. Nor, I have to admit, did I ever choose to ask. All of which I say to provide some background, probably more than you would ever wish for, about my decision 2 years ago to significantly increase my pledge to this congregation. As I've asked that my pledge be deducted from my paycheck, I don't write out pledge checks, but I did notice a chunk missing from the first couple of pay stubs. After that salary, less than it had been, simply became the new norm. I still had enough for my mortgage and for groceries, and I could set aside some for vacation time. Later on, I noticed that I was able to make a larger deduction, which was nice, but the real difference I found was in my relationship to the work of the church. I found myself taking more satisfaction than I had in stories I heard about activities and programs I and my work as your associate minister have nothing to do with directly. Because while I may not have been a part of putting every project in place, now I've helped contribute to them more than I ever had before. I am not a wealthy man, but I feel richer than I ever have before. And then came the day I told my girlfriend Anne how much I was giving to the church. And what you need to know about Anne here is that while she grew up Catholic, she has not been what anyone would call a church person since her childhood. She likes what she sees us do here. The flower ceremony last year moved her to tears. But she's fine keeping our relationships as independent as possible from either of our workplaces. As I don't have time or energy to get very involved in the community of organ donation that she works in, we have struck an equitable balance. When I told Anne I was giving 7% to the church, she turned nearly as chalky white as my mother did back in the museum when I was younger, which is really something if you know Anne. She's a native from Jamaica. Chalky white is not her color scheme. I won't say that Anne is happy about it, per se. That would be more than stretching the truth. But she does understand why I've made the choice I have. And it's given us a fine and very helpful starting off point from which to talk about the life we want together and how we can make it possible, with decisions around money as part of that. Anne plays the lottery. I don't, not since I won $2 in the Minnesota State Lottery over 20 years ago. Decided I'd quit while I was ahead. I told her our odds of winning the lottery now are the same. But I don't tell her I'm glad she still plays it. That last bit aside, what I'm learning, finally, at 47... is how important it is to talk about money openly. And I know I'm just beginning to learn my way into this. I know that if I had children of my own, I wouldn't be able to give to the church at the level I do now. I know that health and other factors may force me to revisit my pledge in time. We do what we can. But doing what I can, all that I can, has never felt so good. Mark and I are both pledging 7% of our salaries back to this congregation. We invite you to be as generous as you can be as well. If you're a newcomer here today, well, this is how we do business here at First UU. We talk to one another about what is most important to us. We encourage one another to be as generous as we can be, and then we step back and trust that folks will make the best decision for them. If you have been around for a while or longer and have already made your pledge for next year's operating budget, thank you. And if you haven't but are going to pledge, please, please, please do so by next Sunday. You'll notice the forms in your order of service. We're making it easy, as easy for you as we can. If you are experiencing or are looking at a financial hardship down the road, please just give Mark or I a call. We want to know. We want to know that you to know that you're not alone and that this congregation will do all we can for you and your family, especially in this economy when the odds are increasingly stacked against us. We have to look out for one another. In our Path to Membership classes, and we held another just yesterday, we encourage folks to make a meaningful and manageable pledge. We mean both. And if you are one for whom talk of money is like the sound of nails on the proverbial chalkboard, please just keep breathing. This too shall pass. And if you're up to it, try a little experiment yourself by testing Updike's notion that it's the silence that's expensive in your own life. I'd like to hear how that goes for you. The leadership of this congregation is working to be clear and more focused about how we talk about money, not so we can keep talking about it, but so we can get on with the business of fulfilling this congregation's mission, about being a vital community that holds one another in care, at the same time as we challenge ourselves to help build the just society we long our children to know. So let our gifts be like the seeds of trees, which when planted give shade to nourish our souls, and whose roots restore the depleted soil. The best gifts are those which are generative, creating ripples of life anew. That's the wonder of it all. Let's see what we can create together.